Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series 4 of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. For now though, sit back, relax, and let's take things from here. This week, I am very excited to announce that we have Daniel Rieger on the show. Daniel is an independent CRA, but he is also the CRA coach. Daniel, welcome to the show. And I've given you a very short introduction there, but if, in your own words, could you just explain a little bit more about who you are and the CRA coach element of things?
Absolutely, James. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm an independent contract CRA. At this point, I've been involved in clinical research for 12, 13-ish years at this point. I'm an American, but I did spend 32 years growing up and living in Germany. So that's where I also kicked off my career in clinical research. Mm-hmm. And I've transitioned back to the States about 6 years ago now. And as you mentioned, I'm the CRA coach. I have a business that provides a very unique coaching program for CRAs. That is an e-learning course, a 1-day, 8-hour course that provides, as the only course that I'm aware of, a really holistic 360-degree management system for all CRA tasks. So from managing your emails to tools that CRAs use for preparation of monitoring visits, conduct of the visits, literally everything that a CRA does. I'm not going to talk for 8 hours about all the content, obviously, but it really encompasses everything that a CRA needs to manage. I created that course because I became aware at some point pretty early on in my career as a CRA, that a lot of CRAs are pretty stressed out because a learning curve I've found as the common problem or cause of that stress is a learning curve is really steep in the first 2 to 3 years as a CRA, because as a CRA, you're overseeing sites, you're managing those sites, and you're responsible for overseeing pretty much everything in the practical conduct of a study on site and overseeing it. And so you get bombarded by trainings for all the individual issues, ICH-TCP, individual regulations for Europe, the UK, United States, regulatory binders, study drug compliance calculations or state of verification, delegation logs, literally all the individual parts. And then you're thrown out there. Well, now you know everything. And then every CRA struggles to find their own system to stay on top of everything, to manage all those individual tasks. And after a brief 5, 6, 7, 8 years doing that, I then basically saw the common denominators that you need to just have in place to be able to manage any kind of study as a CRA and manage all those tasks. And that's what birthed the ASAP course, as simple as possible, is the acronym for that course for CRAs, that teaches CRAs in 1 day what in the current environment they're left out there to figure out on their own over the first 2 to 3 years, maybe even longer. I've had senior CRAs, 10 years experience, take my course and praise it. So
yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible. And as you know, I won't try and hide the fact that, you know, we've struck an association together, because when I came across the course and, you know, I'm dealing with CRAs and clinical operations people all day, every day, it was one of the biggest elements that I identified as kind of, you know, a gap in the market and a need. And there's a lot of people or a lot of courses for people wanting to get into research. But for those that are in, it just seems that it just stops. Other than all of the independent trainings that you've just mentioned. So yeah, for me, when I came across yourself and heard about what you were doing, I had to reach out and had to learn more about the CRA coaching course. Hence why, yeah, I guess us at Huxley Morton are now, you know, trying to, you know, partner with yourself and anyone that secures a CRA gig through ourselves, we will be paying for them to go on that course. because we see so much value in it. So look, no doubt we will come on to the course and the benefits of that in a bit more detail as we move through the show. But look, you mentioned a moment ago that, you know, originally you lived over in Germany. Let's talk about your backstory. I mean, how did you get into this industry? Was it, I mean, did you always want to go down this road? It's the question I always ask everyone.
I don't think anybody who ends up being a CRA ever anticipated it, simply because if you're not from the industry, nobody even knows this job exists. What happened to me in Germany, I was a registered nurse in Germany. And as our second child was on the way, I was looking for something with more career growth opportunities. Mm-hmm. And as a nurse in Germany specifically, there's not really that many options. So my nightmare story is a dear friend of ours. And she is like a lead nurse in the unit that she works for. And what happened to her when she got that lead position, which is pretty much as far as you could then go in Germany mm-hmm. with that career, she got a salary increase of just a little bit, but she had to take a financial hit because you get a bonus for working shifts. And if you're the lead, you're no longer working shifts. So you lose that bonus and you get a salary increase. And she literally made 50 euros more per month.
Wow.
For that lead position. So that was not really an appealing career option for myself with a second child on the way. Mm. And all praise to my wife. She actually then discovered this weird job called a clinical research associate.
Yeah.
And especially in Germany, I met some of the qualifications, not all of them. One of them, I mean, just by coincidence, you have to be fluent in English. Well, I was an American in Germany. Not everybody in Germany is as fluent in English as I am. And you needed to have some kind of medical understanding and be good with office management and such. Mm-hmm. So I then applied for a couple of jobs. Actually, it was even in like a second round once where they flew me up to Denmark for the second interview and I was all excited. But thank goodness I did not get a CRA job at that point in my life. Mm-hmm. I would have been completely overwhelmed and would have not have been able to do that job. What happened instead is I joined a major CRO at an entry-level position. Mm-hmm. And it's no secret, anybody can look it up on LinkedIn. That was PRA at the time at their Mannheim office in Germany. And they have a unique position within their CRO structure called the Medical Monitoring Associate. Right. And I met the qualifications for that perfectly. You know, you don't have to have much background in clinical research. You do need some medical understanding in the office stuff. So I started working for them and worked my way up over four and a half years from medical monitoring associate being MMA 1 to 2 to 3, and then started being the mentor for new hires.
Yeah.
And PRA offers an internal CRA program for transitioning into the CRA role. I applied for that, got into the program, did the training with them, and that's how I became a CRA in Germany, working for a rather large CRO at the time. Did that for a while. So that basically had been my goal for 4.5 years. I wanted to become a CRA. When I did those first interviews, I just loved the idea of the entire job, you know, mm-hmm. traveling to sites, being at the forefront of clinical research. And every day I learned something new. Even as an MMA, I was involved in so many studies because it was just such a small slice of the clinical trial management, just medical monitoring associates only are on distribution lists for studies, lab alerts, protocol deviations.
Does that EKG position alerts still exist, or is it titled differently anywhere else? I guess, look, most of our audience is stateside. Is there something that is the now equivalent?
I do not know if it still has the same name. I believe that they still have that same structure in place. Mm. Our manager of that department at the time was very strong at building business, expanding the department. When I joined, it was literally two colleagues, and I was the third one they hired in Germany.
Wow.
And we were responsible for the rest of the world. At the time I left, we were talking about 4.5 years later, we were talking like 12 colleagues, 15 colleagues. It grew massively. So I do know that they, at that point in time when I left, were still actively expanding their work on clinical trials and had increased staffing needs. I'm pretty sure if you look them up, they would still have that medical monitoring associate role, because it just makes sense. It was a really good interface for the sites and CRAs to have somebody to reach out, study specific about any lab alerts, EKG alerts, or protocol deviations that needed a medical monitoring input.
What was the qualifications difference then, Daniel? Because as you kind of openly said, look, hold my hands up, I'm glad that I did not jump straight in at CRA level.
Yeah.
What would you say is the difference? And what do people need then in order to go in at CRA level? Because the amount of people that reach out to me who are from other industries, have no clinical research experience and talk about transferable skills, have often heard that so-and-so has become a CRA. They think that they could do it. But look, as someone that's been there and done it, what would you say the differences are, and what qualifications and expertise do you think that someone could actually make that jump? Because this is, you know, this is the thing. Most clients, certainly when dealing with me as a recruiter, they're paying for that experience, that, you know, that peace of mind that anyone I provide to them will be able to come in, pick up a study, even if it's a struggling study, and hit the ground running. Hence why, you know, when I came across yourself and your course, I was so interested to learn more. But what qualifications and experience do you think is most critical to becoming, I guess, a successful CRA?
Well, it kind of depends on the scenario. You know, you just brought up an example of like a struggling study. For that, only an experienced CRA. You know, if they're already struggling, you want an experienced CRA.
Yeah.
Anything else? Obviously, the prime source is good study coordinators that have worked on site for several years, mm-hmm. anything 3 years and up, if they're good at their job. I mean, there's always these people and those people, but somebody who's good at their job as a study coordinator on site. Again, I don't want to date myself with the course too much, but the course would help them get exactly that gap of information, how to now manage 15, 20 sites on different studies. So that would be their learning curve, you know. But I do believe that a lot of CRCs, study coordinators, would be great CRAs. Apart from that, it's really difficult because I hear that and I think that myself. Every CRA comes from a different background. You know, some kind of strong scientific background is always good. But every CRA comes from a different background. There's just so many requirements. You know, you got to have a medical understanding, got to be good with people, got to be willing and able to travel a lot for this job. It's not everybody's a preference for a job. You got to be very, very organized. You got to be very cognizant of your timeline. Self-management is super important. And it's really hard to kind of put that in any traditional like job qualification apart from a CRC that knows what clinical trials are about. That was my issue when I had those first interviews, because before I was in MMA, is I didn't know anything about clinical trials. And they're so super complex that for anybody who wants to become a CRA, my recommendation is always either become a site employee and move up to site manager, CRC. Or study coordinator, not necessarily site manager, but study coordinator, or join a CRO at one of the many entry-level positions. And that also then opens it up to what kind of a background you're coming from. Maybe just like a data manager or from the medical field, medical monitoring associate there at the PRA. Well, they were bought in the meantime. Icon, but And but there's a vast variety, or also in-house CRAs that are more narrow in scope of their participation in a clinical trial. The thing is, as a CRA, you pretty much have to understand the entirety of a clinical trial to see where your part fits in. But you're going to be interacting with project management, data management, medical monitor, the sites themselves, the pharmacy, like every part you're going to be interacting with. If you don't have that framework of understanding where all those pieces fit together, it's going to be pretty overwhelming. So that's why I always recommend entry-level position at a CRO. That gives you insight into a narrow part of the trial, but many trials, because you're going to be working full-time. They're going to keep you busy. So you'll be on a lot of calls, a lot of meetings, you have a lot of things, see how a lot of things go wrong, how they're fixed. You just gain that understanding of greater and greater parts of a clinical trial over the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And that would then be a great qualification to move on to the CRA role once you hit that critical mass of understanding of how clinical trials in general work. So you can then put the pieces of the CRA training that they'll then provide you with the ICH GCP source data verification. You know where those pieces belong in the whole framework of a clinical trial. And you're not struggling with being given those pieces while you're trying to understand the framework and where those pieces belong. That would be too much.
Yeah. Okay. So look, that's, I guess, the advice and the roadmap that you would now paint. To take you back to your own journey, however, how did that go?
I was the CRA then with PRA for 2 years in Germany, and then moved on into being a contract CRA in Germany, well, Europe, also Austria, so Germany and Austria.
Yeah.
And did that for about a year. Really loved that. Was very interesting. Got insight into a very extraordinary study at that point in time where we were just doing rescue as a team of contract CRAs, where everything had gone sideways. In a nutshell, what had happened, and I'm not going to give away the sponsor name, and you can't see it on LinkedIn, is a study had been managed and started, and CRAs were not sent out to any sites for the first 3 years of the study. During the entire recruitment phase of the study, not a single CRA was sent out to sites, and the study worked with a small medical practices, I'm not going to give away the indication even that were all very inexperienced. It was just because they had that very rare patient population that they were chosen to participate. They had no experience in clinical trials to speak of. And it was the catastrophe you would expect. And we were just there to sweep up the shards and get the documentation in place.
Thanks for keeping it clean.
and everything documented. So that was a part-time project I was involved in as a contract CRA. Again, did that for about a year. And my heart does beat American, and I always wanted to move back to the United States. And I then had the opportunity with my previous employer at PRA, still had a great relationship, actually even worked a bit as a contractor for them during my contract time, to transition to the United States. And with a family at that point with three children, I did need to and want to play it safe. So it was a very easy, smooth transition for me to move to the States within the structure of a company that I'd worked for many years. I knew their systems, I knew how they work, and then could really focus on the differences between the United States and Germany.
Yeah.
And that made the transition really easy for me. So that was then my next step, working with them and being able to just focus on those differences. And then during COVID, transitioned over to another CRO, and now for almost a year have been working as a contract CRA in the United States. That was always my midterm goal after transitioning over here. First, get acquainted with everything. Mm-hmm. What are the differences here in the States? And once I feel comfortable, which I did then move on into the contract CRA space. And now, of course, be able to focus on my course, which you can't do when you're a salaried employee. You know, when you're a salaried employee, you can't be selling a course that helps CRAs at the competition be better.
Yeah, so. kind of makes sense. But I was losing you a little bit there on the visuals. It was a little bit jolted for anyone who's tuning in via YouTube here. But the audio was still good, and I could still make out that shirt of yours, so I'm happy. But look, what would you say then? You talked about, I guess, trying to learn the way things worked in the States before becoming a contract CRA. So look, what are the differences then between kind of being a CRA in Europe and in the States? It's going to be a multi-part question, this, just to give you the heads up. But that's the first part.
From the CRA's perspective, from your monitoring focus, one of the main differences, at least in Germany, was for me. What we have much more here in the States, and again, it's just my personal experience, but I do believe that is kind of the broader picture. Here in the United States, you are dealing much more with for-profit research sites that are run specifically to do clinical research. And the model often is the owner of that site will hire the entire staff, from the principal investigator to everybody else, down to somebody who's making appointments, doing recruitment and all those things, data management, data entry. Whereas in Germany, at least on all the studies I was involved in during my time, they were all pretty much run at hospitals, university hospitals. And the thing that makes that different is in Germany, with their universal healthcare system and how hospitals are run, any payments that a site receives from the sponsor over the course of the trial, which are substantial payments per successful patient, they pretty much go into the hospital budget, and there is no financial incentive to be falsifying or fabricating data or completely creating patients out of thin air.
Right.
Whereas in the United States, with a for-profit site that is run as a business at the end of the day, you do have to be much more aware that there may be some financial incentive going on here across all your aspects of monitoring, for patient safety to fabrication of data, falsification, all those things. Of course, you look out for that in Germany too. It's just the motivation is not there by far as much as it would be in the United States, because they could fabricate, they could create a patient out of thin air. They're not getting the money for it. You know, it goes into the hospital budget.
So in your experience, and again, look, I won't, certainly won't name you, ask you to name anyone, but have you found it to be a much more common occurrence then in the States than it was in Germany?
Still not much more, but I did have one situation where we just had cause to get our QA department involved and have them have a microscopic look at a certain site. And the backstory there was, again, without giving away anything identifying here, it was in an area that has a very strong Hispanic population. During our several days on site, it was actually just assisting co-monitoring. The colleague that was managing that site, it was obvious that the entire staff and all the patients in the waiting room over several days were all Hispanic. And we had roughly 100 patients enrolled into that study at the site that had all signed an English-informed consent, although there was an IRB-approved Spanish-informed consent. And it also indicated overwhelmingly Caucasian in the physical examination, you know, when we have the questionnaire at screening. And what we did then to kind of dig into it a little bit before we got QA involved is at the screening visit, and now I've got to be careful that I don't give any tips away for people that try that, but still, just tell the story is they measure blood pressure, temperature, body weight, height, whatever, all those things at a screening visit for the patient. Height was the wait a minute. They didn't fake height. The height was the actual patient height. Now, we had roughly 100 Caucasian patients, and their height was on average at 100, 3 inches shorter than the average Caucasian, which you can Google.
Whereas
the average Hispanic had that body height. So that did have us concerned. Obviously, a lot of Hispanics in the United States will speak English. Wouldn't be an issue for them to have signed an English informed consent, but marking them as Caucasian and all having them sign an English informed consent in that kind, that pocket of the United States, was very unlikely that they didn't have at least one patient that was actually Hispanic and needed to sign a Spanish translation. That just raised a red flag. We passed it on to QA. Again, a lot of people want to tell that story. They have that anecdote. They ask, what happened? I'm sorry to say, I was just helping out for a few days co-monitoring. We passed it on that issue to QA, and I wasn't involved, and I never heard about the outcome of that issue. But it's just, you know, that's kind of also thinking outside of the box as a CRA, you know, is like, okay, it looks weird. What would be a data point that could prove that this is not, there's something fishy here.
Yeah.
And for that particular situation, then that was the tool that we came up with. Hey, let's look at the average body height and see if there's a discrepancy here. And then there was. So again, that is just something where I really believe there probably was some fraud going on there. That is just in general much rarer, at least in Germany where I monitored. They just have no interest, no possible benefit from it, you know.
Sure. Okay. So started in Germany, moved to States, kind of found your feet, then went to working as a contract role. At what point was it that the idea for your business and offering the ASAP CRA course, what point did that come about? You know, I understand why, you know, you could see that there's so many others that had perhaps been in that struggle. And sometimes I sit here and think, very good idea. I might try this for recruitment consultants. Because once you've been there, you've done it, you've got all the systems, you know how to do stuff. It's kind of like painting by numbers at times. Certainly for, you know, entry level parts of that role. So at what point was it that you were like, boom, this is something that I can monetize, I can help others, I can build a business out of it?
Yeah, that was about 4 years ago. So I was in the States for about a year or two. And that's when I noticed that it's the same with my colleagues in Europe as it is here. A lot of them are stressed, kind of an epiphany. We're hanging out several CRAs at the same hotel at night after monitoring. And I just noticed the alcohol consumption amongst my colleagues. And it's just not my thing. It's not that I will drink a beer, having lived in Germany or whatever, or frown upon it. But I just noticed that it was kind of amongst colleagues, it was quite frequent that or pervasive to have that attitude of being super stressed out and then you need to relax somehow. And both of those colleagues that evening also were discussing, that kind of shocked me because Germans don't like taking medication that much. We're talking about the pros and cons of different antidepressants that they were taking and had tried out over the last couple of years, what finally worked out for them and so forth. So the epiphany I had is a lot of them are stressed out way beyond the level that I'd imagined. And some of them even have to kind of self-medicate to be able to do the job. So I also saw I had the experience of having worked on both continents. So I knew at that point what really works everywhere. What works in every country, what works in any kind of study setup, because all studies, like you say, you know, it's kind of like just drawing by numbers is, it's very complex in the beginning to learn everything. But after several years, exactly what you say, you know, you've done it so many times, you see the patterns, and especially clinical trials, they all, as a common denominator, work by ICH-GCP. You know, there's always an investigator brochure signature page. You always need to collect CVs if they're older than 2 to 3 years. You always need current GCP certificates. You always need to do patient compliance. You always need to follow up on any emails to a site in a certain amount of time. It's always then the same. It's a lot, but it's always the same because it's all by ICH-GCP. And
it's all systemized, isn't it? And I think it's the way I talk about kind of recruitment, it sounds as though it's the same training CRAs. It's like driving a car, perhaps. You know, anyone who, when they first learn to drive a car, they're having to think about what pedal to push down, particularly if it's a stick shift, you know, where to move the stick. And there's so many thoughts going through that person's head of checking mirrors, checking what gear they're in. Have they got the their foot on the throttle enough? All of those little things. Yet once they've been driving for 2 or 3 years, they're driving down the highway going, you know, well over 100, often with, you know, a burger in one hand, it could be a cigarette in the other, and just steering with their knees. And you're just like, to think that you know, they've gone from that to that. And I'm guessing that's kind of where you're going with this, is that it's always the same and it can be taught.
Exactly. You need the tools, you need the certain spreadsheets, you need a certain Word document. And And in practice, when you start out, you just need to try and test so many things. You know, you have something in theory, I'm going to use this tool. And then out on site, you notice, oh, wait a minute, I didn't think of this. And then when you're writing your report, you're like, ah, dang it, if I would have thought of this 2 weeks ago and had it now and so forth. So it just takes many years to figure those things out that really work in the entirety of the reality of this job, where you're traveling, you're on site, you're walking around looking at equipment on site for calibration records, many things. And then after several years, you figure out the tools that actually work in an entire system that ties into each other. And that, contrary to your example with driving a car, that system and those tools can just be taught in one day. And there was just nobody out there teaching that. And that's what dawned on me, is that so many CRAs, I believe, if you start any new job, and the first 2 to 3 years, you're struggling, and it's frustrating, and it's just so much to figure out, you kind of easily fall into the mindset that it might always be like this forever, or it's just super, super stressful because that's your experience. But it doesn't have to be if somebody taught you an entire cohesive system on day one.
Yeah.
And so that was really, those things just came together for me. And because I'm such a kind of analytical system thinker, that's just how my mind works. I always tell people, when I was early on in clinical research with PRA and Mannheim, one of my first thoughts was there has to be one single way to organize everything and have all your tools. It just has to be. Why don't they teach it?
If there's not, you want to find it.
Well, for myself, I just knew eventually. And thank goodness, one of my first mentors when I was still in MMA, her name's Anja Schreckenberger. So if you're hearing this, Anja, shout out to you after all these years. She taught me one of the most important things during my first week. She took me aside. She was my mentor. And she told me, Daniel, even if you're a smart cookie, it's going to take you 10 years to understand how clinical trials work. Just remember that as you're learning every day.
Yeah.
And that just stuck with me and gave me that peace of mind that that I'm not stupid or whatnot, but it's taken forever to really grasp the totality. And so I already had that mindset at the beginning when I thought there has to be this system. I also had the patience to know, and it would take a couple of years to figure it out. And eventually, at that point in the United States, I then decided, okay, I'm going to create a course that teaches kind of this best practice, provides all the tools and templates. And what I literally did after I came home from that one trip at the hotel and at the bar in the evening, where it really dawned on me that a lot of CRAs are really seriously stressed out.
Yeah.
I grabbed a stack of printer paper and I plastered the entire wall in my office to have one huge sheet of paper.
Wow.
And started creating a mind map of what do I do and how does this tie into that and how does that tie. 6 weeks later, approximately, was the first time I'd slept for 3 nights without having a new idea, either in the morning or at some point during the day. And I then understood, okay, this here is pretty much the entire system.
That was it. That was framework, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And then started working out that course that shows exactly that in one streamlined path to train it and to teach somebody how that system works and provide all the tools. And that's how that came to be. And,
Yeah,
and now the course is there.
I didn't know part of the story, Daniel, that it was a case of pinning paper on the wall and filling it up and sleepless nights. But I guess that's, you know, there's so many business owners out there that will relate to this. And it's just like that idea comes to you and you have to just act on it. Otherwise, you miss the opportunity. So that is pretty inspirational stuff. Let's talk about the course. How does it look? How does it work? What is included?
Yeah, so just a little bit about the evolution of the course. I created it from this huge mind map and then used to do live Zoom calls on weekends. Used to be the training setup. It was a 2-day course at that point, Saturday, Sundays. My customers, clients would take the course live with me. So I did that for the first 2 years and asked for feedback, but also that course package used to include 2 follow-up phone calls for the first 12 months. So my idea was, I'll teach you everything. I'll give you the tools that I show you during the course with screen sharing. And then you implement it as a CRA. And then you have 12 months after you've implemented it with 2 calls to just call me up and we'll discuss any issues. After a year, not a single one of my clients ever called me. So I was like, is my phone dead? What's going on? I reached out to my first 10 clients and I got the same feedback from every one of them. I don't have any more questions. And I was like, well, that's good.
good to know that, you know, it wasn't just that people didn't like the course or didn't like you. You were kind of like, okay, now I'm not offended.
Lost my phone number. Yeah. So that was then the point where I decided it's time for the next step. That's when I automated the course. And that is what we're looking at this point in time, is an e-learning course. So anybody who buys the course gets access to the e-learning platform. And it's pretty much like any e-learning course at a CRO would be. You know, it's recorded slides. It's sometimes recorded on screen where I show certain functionalities. That's also part of the course, is certain functionalities in Excel that every CRA should know, but very few do. That makes your life easier. And so with that access, you have access to all those units then. And then you go through them unit by unit by unit, like you would any other e-learning training. And the totality of the course is 8 hours. And any unit that shows you a tool that you then use as a CRA, that unit then has exactly that tool as download. So you download the exact file that I just showed you in that recording on screen. And then at the end, I have a quick questionnaire for feedback, for any other further improvements, maybe at some point. But yeah, that's pretty much in a nutshell what the course looks like now. And obviously it's at your own pace. And if somebody wants to do it in 5 minute increments and take a year, knock yourself out. Or if you want to do it in one day, you just take 8 hours on a weekend and zoom through the course. And I tried, again, that was my main goal, is to really boil it down to the essentials and make this course a simple training where it just makes sense and the tools are ready to go. And that's what it looks like.
Amazing. And look, I guess who is it aimed at? Is it aimed at those that are aspiring to be CRAs, so CRCs, or is it aimed at CRAs already? Is it suitable for people that are already perhaps working as, you know, contract CRAs and kind of have been around a little bit and kind of know what they're doing? Because where's that target audience for it?
Yeah, it's pretty much three groups are the ideal clients that are going to profit the most. One of them, obviously, is somebody who's just started out as a CRA. You know, if you've just been hired as a junior CRA position, and we could talk about the catch 22 that the companies want you to have 2 years monitoring experience before they're going to hire you ever. So how do you get those 2 years monitoring experience? That's the catch 22 of the CRA career. But anybody, who has just begun as a CRA or is within the first 1, 2, 3 years is going to benefit the most from it. The other category is a CRC, because like I mentioned earlier, if you're a CRC and you do make it through a hiring process into a junior CRA position somewhere, they're likely going to hit you with the standard CRA training. They're going to teach you the definition of a serious adverse event. They're going to teach you about ICH-GCP. They're going to teach you about source data verification. They're going to teach you all the stuff that you know. But they're not going to teach you a system how to actually now transfer that knowledge from managing one site and everything, all the knowledge you've gained there and experience into now you're traveling all the time. Now you have to hit your metrics for trip report writing. Now you have to manage 10, 15, 20 sites. Exactly that missing part is what the course provides. And for CRCs, of course, the huge benefit then is when they go into a job interview, any questions that they might be asked, they understand the entire management system because it is explained in a simple way. I mean, it's called as simple as possible for a reason. They don't have to learn anything like by heart and just be able to regurgitate something. They actually understand how they're going to do it. So now in the interview, they can hit you with any real life situation. Well, how would you do this and that? How do you plan to do that at that? You come prepared to that interview with, I'm going to have a tool that's going to do this. I'm going to organize it like that. This is how I'm going to, all those things they know now that is the difference between being a CRC and a CRA. So they're going to be hyper prepared for that interview. And then also when they ace that interview and get the job, they're going to be extremely well prepared to then, like you say, hit the ground running as a CRA because they're ready to go. They're not struggling to figure out anything anymore when it comes to tools and preparing for a monitoring visit and so forth. They got all that stuff ready to go. So that's the second group that benefits significantly. Mm-hmm. Third group, just as much so, contract CRAs. If you're billing by the hour and you can be 20% more productive, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money as a contract CRA. Mm. So for them, obviously, too, even being super experienced and whatnot, I've had several senior CRAs take my course, and some of the client testimonials on my website are from senior CRAs. And that was also something, James, to be completely honest, when I had my first clients that were senior CRAs, you're like, kind of, oops, I wonder if I'm going to be able to teach them anything at all.
Yeah.
And got just, again, just only positive feedback from all of my clients at this
incredible
point.
Where they would said, you say that's maybe one of the biggest success stories since started out then? Because I guess I would be quite pleased with the initial success where you were like, I had to call my first 10 clients just to check that, you know, whether they had any mm-hmm. questions. And everyone was just, you know, that positive feedback. No, that's it. Completed it. I can just get on with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, what would you say have been the biggest success stories coming off the back of running this?
Really, the positive feedback that to this day, 4 years into the business, I've only had positive feedback from my clients. Anybody who knows anything about being a CRA is you got to be smart to get the job. Your first job, mm-hmm. and then stay in the job and be good at it. There's no stupid people being CRAs. You know, there may be rude people or have other issues with their personality and how they treat sites and so forth, but none of them are dumb.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the thing that was scary at first, you know, like, okay, now I'm going to put a course out here where I'm going to explain how to do this in the most streamlined way. Oh my God, they're going to tear my head off.
Mm. How did that go?
I
guess that I often, you know, even some of the highly, highly regarded executives that I've had on the show, you know, open up to me often, talking about, you know, imposter syndrome and things like this. So you're mm-hmm. kind of putting yourself out there, to kind of anyone who's perhaps been, as you say, senior CRAs who perhaps think they've been there, they've done it, but you're still getting this positive feedback. Now, I guess I'm interested to know where that mental strength comes from in the first place, Daniel, to kind of say, you know what, I'm still going to do this. And I guess how it then feels to get that positive feedback. Must be amazing, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, the first few Zoom calls were terrifying, you know? I mean, you're putting yourself out there and with that promise, I'll teach you anything you need to know to become a top performing stress-free CRA at that point in one weekend, or your money back, no questions asked. And to this day, not a single CRA asked for their money back, not even the senior CRA ones. So it was terrifying, but to your question, what kind of gives you the mental strength? I don't really know what it is. Maybe, I've been into self-development since my late teens to early 20s.
Yeah.
And meditation and just focus. Actually, there's a part in the course that teaches after 25 years of meditation. I do know some meditation techniques that just work for anybody. And I always jokingly say, you know, I'm going to keep any spiritual or religious part out of it. I don't require you to wear a funny hat from now on because you're doing my meditation. It's really just a very technical meditation that works for anybody. And my rationale there is I always use the same comparison. If you'd look at a butcher and watch him work for 4 hours and you saw that he never sharpened his knife as he's cutting meat, anybody would tell that butcher, hey, don't you want to take your knife and sharpen it? It'd mm-hmm. make the rest of your day much easier. Meditation is the equivalent for a CRA. You're using your mind and your focus to do your job, mm-hmm. to cope with the stress, to cope, be on top of everything. So I highly recommend you take your tool, your knife and you sharpen it for a few minutes. And I would say the same thing. Granted, you're not getting any work done in those 5 to 10 minutes, but the rest of your day, you're going to be way more efficient. So that is, even that is part of the course. So, you know, the course really encompasses literally everything. It's not just standard stuff. It's really everything as a CRA. It takes the pieces from any bit of expertise, be it Excel to meditating, and provides CRAs really the condensed thing that they need to be great at their job. But back to, again, that ties in for me after 25 years of meditation. I think it enabled me to overcome that fear and that imposter syndrome. So I've heard of that too, obviously, because I was looking into those things at the time. And it really just helped me overcome it to say, yeah, okay, there's fear there. But honestly, James, to myself, I was thinking really, but just imagine if you could put something out there that actually completely, eventually, at some point in time, hopefully, eradicates this CRA stress for every CRA. Just imagine if you could put that out in the world. And if it would really catch on, people do it, and they, that stress is gone. You know, and people don't have to take antidepressants for their job. I don't know what they have, but personal issues, maybe the marriage sucks too. I don't know. But at least for the professional aspect, to be able to make that transition way smoother, have really highly qualified CRAs doing their job without that stress.
Amazing. You know,
so that motivated me to put it out there and you know, worst case, nobody likes it. They all tell you it's crap. And then you just, well, okay, it was a fun project. But no, the opposite happened. Yeah.
Amazing stuff. Well, look, you know that, we as Huxley Morton as a business back the course as well. You know, we're going to be sort of pushing that and encourage any CRAs to jump on board. We think it's amazing. And I think that's kind of a good place to wrap up the show for today. But before we do, in true Huxley Morton podcast fashion, we always like to close off with a quick fire questions round. Now, I've amended these slightly because normally I've got CEOs and business leaders on. And of course, look, you are a business leader. However, I get so many questions about being a CRA, what things are like. So I've slightly amended things to be a little bit more CRA focused. So look, I'll kick off here and just ask, you know, what is the one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self and perhaps your younger CRA self?
Spend more time on creating good tools that you think might be helpful that you could use again and again and again. You're so busy catching up and metrics and so forth and trying to do your individual project tasks on time that you don't feel you could allow yourself to take the time to maybe take 6 hours to create a perfect spreadsheet that fits your needs exactly. Mm-hmm. You have the time, take it. It's going to save you a lot of time later down the road.
I like it. I like it. I'm all for that. 7 Habits of the Highly Effective People would be backing that as well, Daniel. Mm-hmm. So I like that. If you've not read the book yourself, I'd highly recommend it.
It's on my bucket list. Yeah.
Get it on there.
On the list.
on that note, that what is the number one book or resource that you would recommend for our audience and particularly the CRAs and aspiring CRAs out there?
For aspiring CRAs, I haven't read that many books, to be honest, but what I do know is there's a book by Dan Sfera, S-F-E-R-A, he owns a CRA Academy in California. He's brought out a book and I've only heard great things about it.
Dan had a book out, so I will have to check that out as well.
Yeah. I do know it has like a red bluish cover, something like Essentials about clinical research. Anyway, I've only heard great things about it from colleagues, CRAs. So that I would recommend. Dan Sfera, look up his book. That's going to be helpful.
Definitely. I think, look, just to second that, I mean, I didn't know that Dan had a book out, but, you know, he's been on the show previously and he does an awful lot of work on YouTube and he's got so many tips and tricks out there, hasn't he? So I'll just add to that one. Now, look, I guess moving on to my next question, I typically ask people, you know, what are the top 3 qualities they value most when hiring people? But what would you say are the top 3 qualities to becoming a top performing CRA?
Yeah, I would say being have an affinity for computer systems and IT-ish stuff, be it just spreadsheets, databases. If that's something that you just hate doing, this is not the job for you. Mm-hmm. But also from a personality perspective and things you like or are good at, the polar opposite being good with people. You know, I guess that's one of the things that's kind of tricky to really get really good CRAs, because you just have to be really good with people too, and be able to jump into different sites every other day, different teams, different dynamics going on there, and being able to read people and get people to do what you want them to do, what you need them to do, because it's your responsibility as a CRA. And it's one of my things that I love, is having good relationships with my sites. And that's also where just being very organized just helps, because you're not just focused on your own stress and trying to catch up, but you actually can lift your head off on, above your monitor and look at the people and interact with them, and frees you up with that capacity. So that's just very important, especially when it comes to times like database lock at the end of a study. If you have a good relationship with a site and you can just call Sarah up and have a chat with her and, hey, I know we have a few queries you answered yesterday, but they were re-queried this morning. This is what they look like. Then Sarah is much more likely to have a minute or two or five to log on right now, get that resolved. And then again, being good with people, you pick up the phone, you can call data management, let them know, hey, the site just went over the query responses, your re-queries. Mm-hmm. Can you have a look at it? Data management will jump right on it. So just being able to build good relationships quickly is, again, that polar opposite kind of on the spectrum, guys.
Yeah. Be good with kind of tech savvy, good communicator, organized, and being able to build relationships to summarize all of those. I like it.
Yeah, because I know for a fact from sites, you know, if they don't like you, they'll let your call go to voicemail and they might take 3 days to respond to your email.
And hey Daniel, I think you've just nailed that's what life is like in general.
Exactly.
So yes, exactly. I'm with you there. Look, we've talked a lot about kind of the CRA life, the travel, you know, the course that you're running. But look, I guess we're all human. What is it that you like outside of work? You know, what do you get up to for downtime? Not just to relax and be in a CRA, but just in general.
Yeah, I mean, I have three children. You know, my boys are 17 and 15. I have an 8-year-old daughter. Just being engaged in their lives is super interesting. Two teenage boys, there's always crazy stuff going on. But also where I live here in Boulder, Colorado, just being out in nature. It was also one of the reasons why I always wanted to transition back to the United States, and that I missed in Germany is simply wilderness. Mm-hmm. So for example, here in the state of Colorado, we have Great Sand Dunes National Park, and it's the largest sand dunes in North America. And you can go hiking there. You can get a permit for $6 and you can hike and camp anywhere out in the sand dunes. We're talking 14 square miles of sand.
Wow.
And you're in the middle of nowhere. So right here, like right where I'm sitting with the car, 5 minutes that way is the Rocky Mountains. And we have black bears there and mountain lions. And they're all very hard to find. You know, you don't really want them to find you either.
No, I can imagine.
It's real wilderness. And that is something that I really enjoy, just being able to live somewhere where I can get out in nature and park my car somewhere, take my kids on a hike, and you're really in the middle of nowhere in nature with spectacular views of the Rocky Mountains. So just nature, you know, just kind of the universe doing its thing when people don't mess around with it, just nature and sunsets and there's just so many options to spend your time outdoors here in Colorado. I mean, Colorado is famous for being an outdoor state. We have Aspen for.
I was going to say, it sounds as though you're in the right place for that sort of enjoyment. So no, fair play to you for that one. And look, to kind of close the show, I guess, and on a bit more serious note, what would you say is your number one golden rule for both life and business? Let's say serious, it doesn't need to be, but yeah, what's your number one golden rule for life and business?
Be honest. If you're always honest, then you don't have to keep any stories in the back of your head, and that allows you to be present all the time.
makes life so simple, doesn't it? It's so overlooked. Yeah. It's ridiculous. No, but I love that. I had anyone use that one before. So that is a first. Oh. Look, Daniel, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'm sure we're going to have to get you back because no doubt, you know, I'll get hit with more and more questions about CRA life and things. But look, for anyone looking to reach out to you, find out more about the course, find out more about what you do in general, what is the best way to look you up, to reach out?
Is my website. It's thecra.coach. Some people have seen me on other videos where I had a previous website called thecracoach.com. During the year that I was an employee, I had to take it down. It was hijacked by someone in China in the meantime. So the actual current website is now thecra.coach. There's no .com, .coach. Mm-hmm. And there's a contact section. You can shoot me an email. I think there's even a chat bot. I just chatted with somebody yesterday. Or there's also in the contact section my phone number. Shoot me a text. I'm easygoing. I like talking to people. Just shoot me a text. I'll give you a call back as soon as I have a minute. That's the easiest way to reach me.
Fantastic stuff. Well, as I say, Daniel, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I'm looking forward to seeing more and more of you and what you're doing as time goes on. But for now, I'll let you go. Thanks again for being on the Huxley Morton podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure, James. Thanks so much for having me.
Good man.